Welcome back, everybody, to It's a Chat.
It's a Chat.
A geeky podcast where two friends chat movies, video games, TV shows, whatever we want to chat about. And as always, by my side, the Billy to my Alan Grant.
How about the T-Rex to your Stegosaurus?
Or it should be Spinosaurus, Scott, technically.
Well, for this movie, that's true. Which type of Spinosaurus? The one found in Egypt or and whose remains were destroyed in World War II, or the one found elsewhere in the world?
Oh, wow, you're going deep. You've trumped me. Oh, I'll give you that.
It's purely clicked on Spinosaurus on Wikipedia.
Oh, I see.
That's all. That's literally it.
I just wanted
to know if it was a real dinosaur, and it is.
It's all now Chat GTP rather than, I mean, in our generation, it's Wikipedia. All our knowledge is Wikipedia knowledge. But our kids will just be, being AI will just tell them the facts. That's what's going to happen. But yes.
AI will tell them what they want it to know. What it wants them to know, even. Yes.
Oh God, we'll have to go on to some movies about that. Because finally, Scott, the audience will not rebel against us. We are here to chat, to wrap up yet another trilogy, as we love to do. We love to chat trilogies. And we are finally going to talk about the 2001 Jurassic Park 3.
2001.
Rip through the screen with my talons, three talons. So we're gonna finally get back to Isosaura? I always get it wrong. Isosauna. The second island, Scott. But we'll get into that because I'm a bit confused what I did there. But anyway, we are going to chat about the film. So initially, as we always love to do, do you remember seeing this in the cinema, Scott? Were you excited for this? No.
I did not see this in the cinema.
Were you turned off by Lost World? Or do you just think...
I think so. It was such a long time ago now. I can't remember if I've said, but I know it's one of those ones where I've sort of watched this and it's like I was watching it for the first time. I've definitely seen it. I definitely saw it. Not at the cinema, but you know, when it got released, to watch. I definitely did watch it before, but I didn't really have a memory of what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, this is four years after Lost World, and obviously Lost World wasn't great and didn't do... I mean, I think it did well.
They all do. The recent was like millions upon millions, isn't it?
I think it compared to... It wasn't a flop by any means, but obviously critically wasn't a great success. And this as the first of the Jurassic Park franchise to not be directed by Spielberg. And kind of, we got Spielberg light. We got Joe Johnson taking the helm, who is kind of a prodigy of Spielberg. So he kind of comes from that world and that team. So it's not like, it's a safe pair of hands, Scott, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's kind of a safe movie, isn't it? That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. And I think it feels like one of those movies that feels like maybe, and sort of reading a little bit here again on the Wikipedia, it does feel like it was rewritten and rewritten and rewritten till we kind of, and it probably even, because it's a lean 90 minutes, which we love. We love a 90 minute film, but I feel like there's probably a lot left on the cutting room floor for this one. And kind of they've pared it down and pared it back. And after a recent rewatch, literally yesterday, just to remind myself, they do seem to kill off the majority of the characters pretty early doors.
I've got to ask you about this, right? Speaking about drafting and redrafting and stuff like that.
Sure.
Our old magic wiki here says that a final draft of the script was never completed during production, a circumstance Johnston considered quitting over. Is that a thing? So this thing didn't even have a finalised, signed off script?
Yeah, I mean, it's scary that, I mean, obviously we're, you know, at the time of recording, the in America, right, the writers are on strike. They're treated very poorly and still treated very poorly to this day. I mean, we're talking, you know, 20 odd years on from this film.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, even on these massive budget films, as long as they've got like a rough concept, some ideas of set pieces, and I think there's a classic like Christopher McQuarrie who does all the recent Mission Impossible films. And it's very interesting hearing him talk about it. I mean, he's been in the industry for years, but his job is to basically tie together the set pieces and make them make some sort of logical sense. And in a Mission Impossible film, that's pretty easy to do. You know, you've got your kind of that, but you wouldn't say those scripts are kind of, you know, Oscar winning or even like breaking the mold. They're there to basically get you from piece to piece to piece. And I think this feels not like that, but you know, we've got our set pieces. You can tell what dinosaurs they wanted to put in this. You could tell new stuff they wanted to introduce. And they kind of got this very strange, kind of strange plot device to get them all there.
Mm.
And then the kind of characters they kind of hang it off of, which isn't Alan Grant, which is the kind of divorced couple. It's a very, not only a strange dynamic for the film, because it's obviously not anything to do with dinosaurs or genetic engineering, or it's just an odd dynamic, and also played by two very different character actors. Or two very different actors of very much of the time, I guess. Is that why they were hired? I mean, it's William H. Macy and T. Leone, who they weren't huge in the early 2000s. I mean, this is 2001. I mean, and T. Leone, I know from Just Shoot Me, was a huge sitcom, very popular sitcom. Did you ever watch that, Scott? Just Shoot Me?
No. I mean,
and I guess, and the only other thing I knew her from was she was the sort of love interest
in Bad Boys. Yeah.
But she was, and she went out with David Duchovny, I think, for a bit around this kind of period where, so, and again, she wasn't, that's kind of what I knew her for. And to be honest, I think that's kind of what she was known for.
Yeah.
And then William H. Macy is very much a character actor. He was kind of a Coen Brothers staple, made his name kind of in indie dramas, indie films, and still does, kind of in Fargo and in Magnolia. So it's just an odd, we love it. Do they have chemistry, Scott? We're kind of getting away from, we're not even talking about the dinosaurs or...
Well, kind of. It works from the point of view as they're kind of estranged, aren't they? I know they kind of get back together, sort of.
I think you're supposed to imply that the dinosaurs brought them together.
Yeah. but I mean, it's all right. It's all right. They do an all right job, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's kind of odd because you kind of buy it. I mean, even though, you know, it is that kind of situation, and let's not be around the bush that she is well out of William H. Macy's league in the way of like, from what it seems like. And you don't get much of why they split up or why they divorced. And he kind of runs a hardware store, even though he pretends to be some sort of mogul in order to hire Alan Grant to kind of go to the island. But it's all just a big rescue mission, which I think is a bit, again, this is where it's a bit stolen from the Lost World book. Because I think they plucked bits of the book that they didn't use in the previous film in this one. So it does feel like a bit of a Temple of Doom situation where they had some set pieces they wanted to do. They wanted to obviously introduce a bigger and badder dinosaur, it feels like, and they wanted to introduce the pterosaurs. That feels like a big thing they wanted to do. And I was very surprised that the raptors, even though they're kind of introduced as a major plot point at the beginning of the film, I forgot how little they're in it at all.
Yeah.
Which again feels like a cutting room. That feels like a cutting room floor thing, because that feels kind of almost completely pointless.
I guess you're right. I mean, it's there's an interesting development in that they did sort of develop. I'm skipping ahead a bit here, but Dr. Grant's, I'm going to start calling him the Ron Grant again, aren't I? As usual in this podcast.
Try not to.
Yes, they recreate the larynx of a raptor. So yes, like essentially the evolution of the raptor in this is all of a sudden they can communicate with the raptor. In theory.
Yeah, it's kind of a part inside its skull, isn't it? It's kind of a resonator almost. So kind of that implying that they can talk to each other. That, and he says at the beginning then, but they're smarter than chimpanzees, than all these sort of other mammals that we dolphins and chimpanzees. And
yeah.
And they kind of, and that's how the film starts. And it's kind of, so you think, okay, so this is going to be the plot line for the rest of the film. This is what we're going to kind of explore. And they kind of start to do it. Billy, he's kind of a right-hand man, steals an egg, and they're supposed to be kind of hunting them. But you don't really get a sense of that at all through the whole film until the end. And then they kind of have a little scene, and then it's done. And he gets to use his little resonator pipe thing. and that's it. And it kind of feels like, I mean, it's a difficult one to feel like how they could have built an entire story around that, but it just feels like they didn't know what to do with it at all.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like you can see, I remember you saying that this is one that you quite enjoyed. I hope the rewatch hasn't kind of spoiled it for you.
No, I think, I mean, obviously coming off the back of Lost World, it can't have been worse. And I think it's almost now similar to Lost World. It's got some nice ideas. Mm. And I think this one kind of just, again, being 90 minutes, killing off people pretty quick when we're thrown into it. You just don't have time to kind of stop and kind of go, oh, wait a minute, why are we doing this again? Because you're on to the next running and shouting and screaming bit. So I think it kind of ties together a bit better than Lost World. Yeah. But on a rewatch, it's just a bit nothing, I guess. It's just a bit like, nah, sure. You kind of start where you ended. Nothing has the status quo changed from the beginning of the film to the end. No. You know, I don't see what was the bigger picture or bigger idea for, you know, like the Jurassic World movies, love them or hate them, at least they kind of, they try and do something very different with each film and a very big picture, I guess. You know, dinosaurs are now everywhere and they're, you know, eating people. Whereas this, because my first question, I guess, okay, so let's reel it back, Scott. All right. So, in the second film, and we said this was a mistake, they chose to have Ian Malcolm as their leading man.
Yes.
So they obviously realised this was a mistake as well. Yeah. And they need to get back Alan Grant to kind of lead all this, become the leading man for this. Was that the right choice, and did he do a good job?
Yeah, I think he was one of the best bits about it, I think. It's just whether they used him enough and differently enough. I don't know. Do you need to use him differently? I don't know. He's a paleontologist, isn't he? Obviously, a set obsessed with raptors. continually speaks about raptors and how intelligent they are and stuff like that, and what he's in theorizing. So yeah, I mean, it was good to see him back. And I think this movie was better than Lost World because of that.
Yeah, it's definitely, it does feel like a bit of a retread. He's kind of doing the same thing. He, you know, getting people through a Jurassic Island using his knowledge. But I guess he didn't get to use his knowledge as much, as there's too much kind of just right. He seems very capable.
Because basically he's struggling for money again, and it's the same trap, isn't it, he falls into twice. he's running out of money for his dig, and these two apparently rich people turn up and offer him a load of money to come along on a trip again.
Yeah, you think you do your due diligence, you think you check, I mean, again, it's the time of the internet by 2001. Do a little googling of this person before you accept a check. Oh, checks, Scott, remember checkbooks?
Boy, oy, 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 oy.
So yeah, and I like the idea that he is he calls the dinosaurs on Jurassic Park, basically they were just a sort of fabrication almost. They were kind of a, they weren't real dinosaurs in a way. And I know, and it's a shame they didn't go more into that, because there was, they kind of had that in the book of Jurassic Park, that that actually those dinosaurs were incredibly real, and they wanted to basically bioengineer them to be more what people thought the dinosaurs should look like and act like. And so that, again, that's a quite an interesting philosophical stroke genetics question. I don't know, and again, I don't know how you explore that in a blockbuster movie, but I do like the idea that he was basically like, nah, those dinosaurs weren't the real, I'm back digging, these are real, the bones are real, and those dinosaurs on that island are just, you know, a creation of John Hammond, and that's it. But and because I think they made the first choice they make, which I think is the wrong choice, is to go back to the island of the second film rather than go back to Isa Nubla in the first film. Because I feel like if you do that, then you, you know, the bones or the wreckage of the park and the massive signs and the when dinosaurs, you know, picking your way through that, those sets and that look, I feel like would have been a better choice. And also for Grant, would have brought back all those memories of what happened there and maybe a bit of PTSD. And I don't know, that I think there's, rather than dragging him to an island he's never been to before. do you think that was the right choice or wrong choice? Or just
I think both movies could have gone back to the, well, I suppose, could they have gone back to the original one?
I think so.
I mean,
and plus it's a big island. And you even see, you see it on the map when they're kind of, the Jurassic Park only takes, if you want another bit of the island where they bred the dinosaurs, I think this whole kind of two island thing, just, I don't know, it just becomes a bit pointless and just drags you away. Because again, because in the brochure for Jurassic Park, they had all those rides and they had the aviary and they had the, you know, so that could have all been half built and under construction kind of stuff. So
that's the big thing about this movie, isn't it? And that this is what I kind of remembered it for, is this is flying dinosaur movie.
Yeah, but again, they're just thrown in for a set piece. Yeah,
right at the end.
Yeah, and a very, and to be honest, it's probably the strongest set piece of the film.
Yeah, sorry, I skipped ahead there, but that was just, this is what I remember Jurassic Park 3 for.
I mean, I'm staring at the poster, and the poster has a massive shadow of the pterosaur sort of flying across it. But it's not, they're just there for a scene. It's not really about them. I don't know. It's an odd one. Like you say, and I think this is, like you say, if they didn't have a lock script, they were kind of just not making up as they go along, but probably just, it does feel a bit like that, you know, going from A to B to C. We need to get to the shore. We need to get out of the island.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the only bit of plotting that there is. which is fine. I mean, again, I'm not, it's a, you know, they want it to be a roller coaster ride, I guess. They don't want it to be too heavy.
Mm.
But I just don't really do anything with the stuff they've thrown in there. Like Billy stealing the egg, confessing he's stolen the egg. And all that, it's just an excuse for a bit of conflict that doesn't really work. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. I sound like I'm really down on it, which I'm more down on it because it's, as always with these films, they've got the potential to be better
than
they kind of pulled off here. And to be honest, it's kind of that cadence for all of these films up until Dominion. I feel like they're never going to recapture what Jurassic Park had.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So why is that, Scott?
I think we talked about it before.
Yeah.
So at the risk of repeating myself, nothing will ever duplicate or replicate that experience of watching those dinosaurs on screen for the first time.
Mm.
They never really recapture that magic. And
I don't know what you feel about this, but I thought the dinosaurs looked, all of them looked incredibly ropey.
If it hasn't somehow, it hasn't aged as well as the first movie.
No, but I think that's like, it's the, no, and it's the Star Wars thing, and it's the anything in the 80s. I don't know. It just, they knew, because they were limited, they kind of knew how to film it almost, and they knew to hold back. Whereas this was like full daylight. We can show the dinosaurs, and you can't. Because the best ones were the kind of, the bird, the pterosaur attack, because it was all foggy, and the Spinosaurus kind of attack on the boat at the end because it's raining and it's dark. So you kind of get away with it. Whereas broad daylight, they look pretty, you just tell they're CGI, which is, so it, like you said, Scott, it just takes you out of it. You're like, well, these aren't real.
Fine. Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a bit of that. They don't really sit in the film at all. And there's a lot of sets here. There's a lot, they don't think they shot a lot of this on an island.
Yeah.
If at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it cost $93 million to make, which is which is expensive, but it's not extortionate, is it?
No, that's less than I thought it would. Yeah.
I guess that's why.
Yeah, and because I guess it's not, but there's not loads of dinosaurs in this as far as what we see. It's just it's just not shot in any kind of artistic way or any kind of, I don't know, it just feels very flat, doesn't it? I don't know, kind of how we're talking about it all feels very workmanlike, which I guess Joe Johnson, like you say, if he was working with an incomplete script, and just kind of making it up or trying to do the best you could with what he had, it's probably a miracle it kind of came together as much as it does. That's always the other thing. So the fact that it's kind of not a complete mess.
Yeah.
That's not a great compliment, is it?
Like you say, it was all right. We're sounding very negative on it, and you're absolutely right. That's because, these movies could have been absolutely astounding. But it's just okay, isn't it?
Yeah, because like we said, we get, like, bringing it back to the, we get reintroduced to Alan Grant, and they kind of get reintroduced to, the one of the other best characters of Jurassic Park in Laura Dern. As Sadler, and she's moved on, she's married, she's got kids, which Grant struggles to in any way connect with at all. And I guess there's a, because I don't know, the chemistry they had in the first film was a bit odd anyway, wasn't it? I don't know if it was, they were destined to be together forever, and I kind of like the fact that they're not, that she's moved on. Or moved on to, unfortunately, quite a kind of, I don't know, is it a bit sexist to say kind of just a, she just feels like she's just at home being a mum.
Backseat role.
Yeah, I know she rescues him at the end, but this does feel a bit out of time.
Yeah, a bit out of character, maybe.
Yeah, she never struck me as that kind of person who would put up with just being a stay-at-home mum.
But no.
Again, maybe she's not, but from the film, the information the film has given us, it very much feels like that.
Yeah, and Dr. Grant's the one who's off again to an island.
On an adventure.
On an adventure.
Yeah, and again, this feels very, just a bit underdeveloped, a bit kind of, again, it just feels like it's a plot device to get, because we need to phone her up at the end.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. It was nice to see. It was good to see her. But again, it just feels like a bit of a waste. So
did you see the twist of the Kirby's actually just being a divorced middle-aged couple? Did you sort of see that? I was like,
I don't know. It's odd that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I felt when I first saw it. I don't know. Because I think, now I know, it's kind of, I can't take myself back. Scott, I can't. I've seen this in the cinema. Because, I think I did see this in the cinema. I'm pretty sure I did. And I don't know how... It's weird again, because does it really matter? And I thought, like, if could you have appealed to Alan Grant with the actual, with the truth?
Like, yeah, to... I think you probably could have, because he's that sort of guy, isn't he? He doesn't like kids necessarily, or he doesn't get on with kids. But I absolutely think that he would have helped them.
Yeah, like they turn up at one of his lectures. They've tried all the other avenues. They've tried the government. They've tried the Costa Rican government and all this, and their son is missing.
When they go into land, he protests and they fucking knock him out, don't they?
There's a lot of violence towards him at the start. It purely seems to want to get him on to the eye. And again, it just feels like when you're jumping through that many hoops clockwise just to get Alan Grant onto the island,
why don't you just do
all the heavy lifting before you take off? You know, my son's missing. He's on an island of dinosaurs. Nobody's helping me. You've been to it. And again, this is another reason to set it on the original Jurassic Park. You've been there. Help me.
Help me, Ian Grant. You're my only hope.
Yeah.
It was intentional.
I don't know. I think, and then you don't have the, because again, you introduce these three mercenaries. I don't know what they are. These three guys, one of which was, again, did you ever watch, what the hell was it called? That Burt Reynolds comedy series.
I don't think so.
Oh, what was it called? It was
not Smokey and the Bandit.
No. This was a sitcom, kind of late 90s sitcom. People will be screaming at. I'm gonna look it up now. But the guy, the guy with the tash, he's in that, and he's kind of this weak, weirdy character in this sitcom, and that's all I know him from before this. And I don't want to do a disservice to that actor, but that's kind of what I knew him for. So it felt very weird to cast him as even though he's supposed to be kind of what, the middleman to get to these two guys.
Burt Reynolds was in a lot of stuff.
He was. This was kind of something. I want to say Sunset Shady something. We're thinking 90s, Scott.
90s. I remember BL Striker.
But this was TV.
Evening Shade.
That's it. Evening Shade. There it is.
Evening Shade,
which was a complete vehicle for him. I'm kind of struggling to even know what it was about, but he was in that.
A former professional football player.
Okay.
Retires to his hometown of Evening Shade.
Nice.
And settles into a new job as coach of a high school football team with a long losing streak.
Oh. Hilarious.
His comedy series shines a light on life in rural America with a focus on the three F's, faith, family, and friends.
Ooh. Yeah. A classic, Scott. How many seasons did that go for?
Just closed it. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was curious about
people want to hear about dinosaurs.
Sorry.
Not Burt Reynolds sitcoms.
But again,
they do. I don't know. If you want to hear about Burt Reynolds sitcoms...
or the Smokey and the Bandit series. That's
yeah, gone. Smokey and the Bandit. Isn't it a trilogy
or
as well?
Or the Cannibal Run. I'd do that. Oh, classics.
Oh, man. John Candy as well in a Cannibal Run. John Candy?
No. It's John DeLuise.
Yes.
Captain Chaos. Captain Chaos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. And they take the ambulance. Oh, my God.
Yes.
We're off on a tangent.
Oh. Yeah, but again, it's just another very, like William H. Macy and T. Leone, just a very strange bit of casting. I mean, did you buy him as a mercenary, not knowing his Evening Shade past?
I mean, he's sort of a nothing character, isn't it? Really? Just there.
They're all there to be killed, but I just forgot they got killed very quickly.
Yeah.
They kind of crash on the island, or land on the island, sorry, and then run into the forest, and literally 2 seconds later run out of the forest and jump on the plane because they've been petrified, and then they run over one of the unfortunate guys. Oh, no, sorry, he gets grabbed, doesn't he? He gets eaten.
Spinosaurus attacks the plane and eats.
And then they crash. They crash, and then the other guy gets eaten pretty much straight away. And then you got the bearded guy, Tash guy, Evening Shade Man, who to, and again, that his death is pretty nasty out of all the, I think he's got the nastiest death because he's used as bait by the velociraptors to kind of try and lure them down from the trees.
Oh yeah, that's horrifying, isn't it?
Yeah. And then they snap his neck for no reason. the raptors do.
That's right.
Which seems very vicious for raptors. But yeah.
Does it? I don't know. They're quite nasty.
They are, but it does seem like a bit of like, oh, I'm done with you. You could have just left him to die. He just goes, oh, I snap your neck.
I think it was showing how, or trying to show how human-like in intelligence they are.
Yes.
Sort of, that's the sort of dick move a human, I think. My trap hasn't worked. I'm going to kill your mate anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Later. He should have been looking them in the eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's what I mean. So there's no, because then from that point on, and we're only like about, again, this is breakneck speed, half an hour in, 20 minutes, half an hour. So there's nobody, and nobody else dies now from this point on. You know, we get a bit of a fake out with Billy, yeah, which is a bit odd. I don't know whether they wanted a spin-off series with Billy. but there's no threat anymore. I don't know. It doesn't feel like, to me, that it didn't feel like you were going to kill off one of the parents, the mum and dad of the thing. You're never going to kill Alan Grant. Billy is obviously done something silly, so he was the obvious one to go. And then they find Eric, the boy, who seems to be probably the most, to put him in charge. He seems incredibly capable for a 12-year-old. You know, my son is 11.
Yeah, he's a survivor, isn't he?
Yeah, he's gassing raptors. He's stealing T-Rex.
He's got a place where he's like a lair, isn't he?
Yeah.
Where he hides. He's Batman on that island.
He's got camouflage. He probably doesn't want to be rescued, Scott. He seems to be having a whale of a time.
I guess it kind of makes Dr. Grant, I'm just going to call him Dr. Grant, because it kind of, I feel like it makes him warm to him, doesn't it? I feel like it. He kind of looks at him and he's like, oh, you remind me of a young me sort of thing.
Mm.
You know, I feel like it kind of makes him feel like the rescue is oh my God, I'm going to go, is worth it.
Well, yeah, and I think because they assume he's dead, they find the poor lover, I guess, of Tia Leone's character or current boyfriend hanging dead in a tree, kind of masticated, just bones and skin. So the fact that this 12-year-old boy, I mean, he looks like that. What trauma is this kid? This kid is fucked for the rest of his life, right? Because, I mean... He gets rescued by the boyfriend when they crash onto the island. And then what, is he hanging in that tree and gets killed in the tree? Or just, because we kind of see the video footage of them crashing and he cuts cuts Eric loose. And then just dies in the tree?
Yeah, I think he probably gets eaten in the tree.
But then, yeah, did Eric's, and again, I mean, not it's just it's a bit of a leap to, because we don't get any sort of background of, was he a Boy Scout? Was he was he into Bear Grylls?
Where did he learn the skills? That's very true.
Yeah, which again, kind of, if you set it in a theme park or in a place where there might be places, you know, like accommodation to hide out in, places that he could, you know, lock himself into rather than finding, I don't even know what he's in his little weird hidey hole. He just seems incredibly capable.
I'd be stuffed in that scenario.
Oh God, yeah, I'd be dead. I'd be hanging in that tree still. I probably would have even, I probably wouldn't even got cut loose for a start. As soon as that boat crashed, that's probably when I would have died. because I'm trying, because I was also, I think that original setup of how they get lost on the island, I think that's in the Lost World book of the paragliding stuff. I'd have to reread the book.
Yeah.
But I think there's some of that, which is, again, it's a cool, I like the idea. I like the idea of some entrepreneurial Costa Ricans just taking these idiotic American tourists on a dinosaur. I like that. I like the dinosaur parachute. And again, I don't know what, it's just that logic thing of what ate them on the boat as well. Oh, I don't know, Scott. I don't know. There's a lot of leaps that you have to make.
Yeah, I see. What I try and do is not think about it. Just go with it. Just roll with the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's it. I mean, it's completely harmless in a way that I think Lost World was a bit offense. Not offense. It wasn't even offense. It's not offense. Neither of these films are offensively bad. They just feel very cobbled together from a thousand different ideas. It doesn't have a clear, like Jurassic Park has a very clear vision and like we discussed, a very clear message. Yeah. Whereas this doesn't really say anything. There's even a line in this film where I think it's T. Leone's character says, is this how you make dinosaurs? And Alan Grant says, no, this is how you play God. And it's like, that just feels very lofty, a very lofty statement to make for this film. Would you say, I mean, do you think, does this film have a message?
I don't think so. I couldn't identify the message other than to say it's just humans can't leave well enough alone, can they? Yet again, here we are on this island with dinosaurs, and it turns out there's a bloody aviary with flying dinosaurs in, and now they get out.
Yeah, I guess that. Yeah, and again, I kind of forgot because that's the big thing that Jurassic World has, and I don't know if they've done any stories or comics or what happens between this film and Jurassic World, because obviously it's all part of the same. It's not a reboot. So obviously they get control of the situation, control of the island. They build the theme park again. But I'm very curious what's that leap from the end of this film where, again, we see it very loosely. I kind of almost blink and you'll miss it that T. Leone's character doesn't lock the door properly to the aviary,
yeah.
I guess. So they escape, even though...
That's right.
Yeah. And so now, oh no, there's pterosaurs. They're flying over the... the ocean.
But I'm not going to check this door.
Are they that smart? Because we're trying to say that the raptors are smart, but is a pterosaur going to go, oh, that door's open?
Yeah, it's gonna sit up in a tree, surely, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some clever birds out there. Maybe that's what they were going for. Don't really know how clever pterodons and stuff were supposed to be.
No. But so yeah. So I guess I like this. I mean, things I like about it, I like the satellite phone gag. I did like the kind of the guy getting eaten and the Spinosaurus swallowing this phone.
It's a bit Peter Pan, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm, yes. That's true.
Captain
that's true.
Kirk and the clock. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a good spill. I mean, Spielberg loves yeah, after Jiminy Cricket and being all. And I think he's got a big soft spot for Peter Pan, especially, or Pinocchio and all that kind of stuff. So I think Disney still films. But you're right. Yeah, that's definitely a good spot, a good reference. Scott.
Oh, thank you. But you know it what had mean? To I be think... one. That's my one of the pod.
but I think it's a nice gag which they use when the parents have their big sort of, or the parents and the son have the big emotional reunion, but he's drawn there by the sound of the ringtone of the satellite phone which is in the belly of the, and they just all turn around and he's just kind of standing in a tree line going, yep, I'm here.
Don't they find it in some poo in the end?
They do find it in the poo later on.
It shits the phone out.
It shits the phone out, and also bones and glasses and various bits of the humans it's eaten, but including the phone. Which again feels like it's just a MacGuffin to get them to. But yeah, I'm not berating them for. You know, that's what films are made, building blocks of stories. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I feel like I'm talking myself out of this film now, Scott. The more we chat about it,
it happens now and then, Paul. I feel like I'm doing to you what occasionally you might have done to me in the past, which is when upon a rewatch and when we really get into the movie, I end up thinking, yeah, that wasn't great, was it?
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed it at the time until we actually talk about it. And you think about it a little bit more, I think, when you discuss it, don't you?
Yeah, no, you just delve into it a bit. And I think it just wasn't, there's nothing really to hang. Because I can't even think, I mean, would you say, because I was thinking the bird, the pterosaur set piece is my favourite and probably the strongest set piece. But have you got a favourite set piece of the film?
It's got to be the birds, yeah, for sure. It's got to be the birds. I like the idea of the velociraptor larynx. I think it was a bit, I don't know, a bit, they sort of forced it in there in the end, didn't they? They didn't use it necessarily very cleverly or anything like that. It's just...
No, because I'm even unsure what he does. He kind of, it almost feels like if he hadn't have done that, it still would have been absolutely fine. Like she gives him the eggs, she gives the raptors back the eggs, and then he kind of makes a sound, and they even say, oh, not that sound, another sound.
Yeah.
But what sound? I don't understand what, and then the military arrive anyway and scare them off. I don't feel like he didn't commute. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you do with that unless you sort of go, because I forgot, I did make a note of the weird talking raptor we get at the start of the film. I don't know if you remember this, Scott, where Alan Grant has a dream or he's kind of asleep on a plane.
Yes.
but it's also like, what is that building up? Is that building that he's fearful of raptors, that he can't stop dreaming about them? Or I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Yeah, it kind of says his name.
I feel like it's a weird foreshadowing of the larynx, the reconstructed larynx that never really pays off.
That's what I mean. It does feel like, was this a plot line that just didn't really go anywhere? Because I think, just reading on the Wikipedia, so they did have, they thought that the first draft of the script was too complicated. And David Cope, Kep, Coop. Who wrote the first one and is very well known for the Blade series. He's an old hand at Batman as well. He was involved in the Batman Begins trilogy. But so he suggested a simpler story, but obviously they didn't have the script for that simpler story. So they had a script by Backman. But it was rejected 5 weeks ahead of filming.
What did you reckon about... sorry, I'm interrupting you now.
No, go for it.
I was thinking of a set pieces. What do you think about Spinosaurus versus Tyrannosaurus?
Well, it's weird because I kind of... Watching the crash, because it's almost all part of the landing, the guy getting eaten by the Spinosaurus, and they crash, and then the Spinosaurus kind of uses them as a... like a tin can, and he's kicking the tin can down and that's quite cool. I kind of liked that bit, and he's crushing and that all looked quite good as well. Like, I think the Spinosaurus in the forest kind of worked really well. And it's almost like they didn't know, was it kind of a gag at the end that they run into the T-Rex and then the T-Rex gets just, then it kind of becomes King Kong. Because you have that King Kong thing of King Kong versus the two T-Rexes. So it felt like that, like very old school Ray Harryhausen monster movie.
Yeah.
And again, ends like snapping necks, don't they? Dinosaurs.
They do, yeah.
Dinosaur move. It was, I don't know, Scott, it was cool, I guess, but pointless.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, you just haven't set it. I don't, because I guess isn't the best.
Oh, Paul's got into it. Paul's got into a loop. He's spiraling.
Because even the books, and even the first film, they kind of try to say that the dinosaurs are animals. These are living creatures who have a ecosystem, and they have a way of, you know, life finds a way.
Hmm.
Whereas this is just treating them like monsters. Apart from it, the raptors, which they try to kind of say they communicated with each other.
It doesn't really go anywhere there, does it? Because they're not, like you've said before, they're not the central piece of the movie by any means.
No, they're dropped.
It's quite hard to identify what is the...
Yeah, because it feels like the egg thing... It's weird. Just on the rewatch, I thought they were a bigger part of the film.
Yeah.
But they're basically just in it in about three scenes, I think. And that's it. And Billy's still in the egg. I don't know. It's not like they're being hunted across the island.
So I've got a big question for you now.
Oh, go for it. Ooh.
Well, I think that we'd originally put this as number two behind Jurassic Park out of the three. Where do you reckon it sits now upon another rewatch? Do you think that this is still better than Lost World? Because I'm not 100% sure anymore.
I mean, neither anymore, because the way we almost talked our way into Lost World, when we chatted about Lost World, I think we both thought Lost World's crap. And then we talked about it and we went, oh, the Great White Hunter, the kind of, you know, because of Pete Postlethwaite's character who we love and agree with everything he stands for. But we kind of, if you remove the San Diego bit from that film and you kind of, again, there's a good film in there somewhere. I just don't know if there's a good film in three. Like, even if you added some stuff and you kind of fleshed out the characters, I don't know if the setup of the parents trying to find their son is enough. Whereas, you know, at least in Lost World, they were swinging big. You know, they were trying to take the dinosaurs off the island. It was InGen. It was a lot of intrigue and there was a lot of conflict within the group, and it was two. So I don't know that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, maybe it is in order. Maybe it's Jurassic Park, Lost World, three. What are you feeling? What were you feeling now?
I can't decide which one is worse. But I think two might have pipped it now. But I need to go back and listen to the pod about two, because I think I was still pretty damning about it.
We were. But I feel like,
at least try to do more than this.
I think so. And it kind of, and again, is it, so I guess, so the question tacked onto that, even at its worst, is it because Spielberg, even when Spielberg is bad, and let's be honest, he has made bad films, is he still better than most people, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Because like I was saying about the kind of, the raptors in the grass, and you see them cutting through, and even everything has that. There's just some really nice shots, some really nice ideas.
Yeah, so he's a maestro. He's a maestro.
So even when he's phoning it in, which he obviously was doing with that, it's still better than most directors can do when they're trying. Old Joe Johnson. And all right, so let's bring that back. I love the Joe Johnson directed The Rocketeer, which is one of my favorite films of the 90s, one of my favorite childhood films. I think First Avenger, he did Captain America, which I think is very solid. I think Joe Johnson is a okay, and it sounds horrible, but like a workman-like director. He knows what to do.
He's your backup quarterback.
Yeah. He's your go-to. He's your kind
he's
of
your
Ron,
journeyman.
Is your Ron Howard doing Star Wars Solo? You know, it's like safe pair of hands.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to go wrong with a Joe Johnson or a Ron Howard.
There's a very important place for them in cinema and direction.
Whereas Spielberg is something else.
It's just special.
he is
the special one.
You know, and it'd be interesting to look at, you know, do a pod on his career, because he's obviously had ups and downs, and he's in a very, you know, I haven't seen The Fablemans yet. I mean, he's in an interesting part, but it does feel like from Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, that incredible year he had with those two films, which were so polar opposite, so incredible films, but almost by seemingly by two different directors. Since then, I don't know if he's ever done something that reached the heights of that year.
Mm.
You know, I just, Munich and West Side Story and all the films he's done since then, Ready Player One, if you want to go down the kind of blockbuster route, because I don't think even he knew what he wanted to do. I think because it's weird, it kind of split him into two different directors that year. And from that point on, he'd do one for them and one for himself. Like, here's your Ready Player One and here's my Munich. And I want to do West Side Story. And now Fablemans, now he's, you know, he's in his advancing years, just trying to do his passion projects, I guess. Now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, would you think that, Scott, do you think he's ever going to recapture what he did?
I think it's going to be tough because, like, we talked about Jurassic Park and how magic it was. And like, if that can't be bettered, maybe that is his masterpiece, you know. Maybe he's not going to do better than that. And stuff. Do you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I found a cool thing about the larynx and an early... I'm still on it.
No, you love it. I love it.
This was just... It's because it was just such a... It stood out so much that you're thinking... This is going to be a key point.
Well, yeah, they 3D print it.
But in an early draft of the movie, an early script featured a death sequence for the Spinosaurus near the end of the film, as Alan Grant would use the resonating chamber to call a pack of raptors which would attack it and kill it. And all of a sudden, larynx makes sense.
Because you kind
Doesn't
of
it?
Think, yeah,
it's what a great scene that would have been.
Because in the film, you kind of suddenly think, because it's kind of a cool action set piece in the water and the dad's drawing them away and then he fires the flare gun. And in my head, it was like, oh yeah, this ends really. But all it happens is that it catches fire and it's like, oh, it's a bit hot now, I'm off. And you never see it again. And that's it.
Yeah.
So again, it just kind of, it's just a bit of a damp squib on the end. But that sounds cool. Yeah. Again, it gives you a reason to bring the resonator, you build that up over the film, and then he maybe communicates or says the wrong thing to them.
Yeah, sort of, that's right. He learns as he goes through the movie, and he effectively, Dr. Grant, he can't necessarily communicate with them.
He talks with the animals, Scott.
Yeah, he's Dr. Doolittle.
And that makes the dream sequence make sense then, because he can talk to them now. And then maybe one of the raptors at the end just go, it's all...
Also, listen to this. You know, we talked about CGI and what it feels like, the lack of dinosaurs in the movie?
Mm.
The film contains more than 400 effect shots, about twice the number featured in the previous two movies combined.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
And it doesn't feel like that at all. I don't...
No.
And there's something about, it's the Jaws effect, again, sort of going back to Spielberg, that the less you see, the more you kind of just really cherish those moments when you do. And you can't top the T-Rex in Jurassic Park and even the raptor. I don't know, you just can't... Jurassic Park,
no.
I guess. And I think...
They were doomed. From the start, they made Jurassic Park, and I don't think you can do better than that. Even now,
and they're still going. I mean, God, we're talking now. We're six movies deep, and
yeah, man. But these things now make billions of dollars. It doesn't matter. They put out a Jurassic World Dominion movie. It makes hundreds of thousands, hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. You know, I think the most recent one. I need to check out my figures, but I'm pretty sure they hit the billion.
Yeah, probably. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, and that kind of was the, again, not, it's always a weird thing where they try and bring together, oh, look at those classic characters from the Jurassic World franchise. Really?
Yeah.
What? Sorry? Meeting up with the Jurassic Park ones. Oh, Jurassic Park. Yeah, well, yeah, cool. But yeah, and again, I have to admit, I haven't seen it yet. I feel bad. Have you seen Dominion, Scott?
I've watched all of them in preparation for us continuing this trilogy chat into the new trilogy of movies. Yes.
So what
I have.
Is Dominion worth the wait?
They're solid movies, much much like this, like they're not terrible movies. My whole family will happily sit down and watch them and enjoy them. You know, they're all right. There's a huge budget involved in them, and they're quality productions. The dialogue and stuff like that leaves a lot to be desired. Do you know what? They remind me a bit of Fast and Furious movies. They'll just release them and they get crazier in each one. They really lean into the whole sort of theme park thing with them, in that, you know, theme parks always have to do bigger and better and faster rides. Well, they feel like they need to do bigger and better and faster dinosaurs, even to the point where they're just fabricating dinosaurs that didn't exist. They're just creating their own dinosaurs. That's a big theme of them, obviously. They're okay, mate. They're okay. Until I watched them, I was very, very much of the opinion of, oh, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy these movies, but they're at least on a par with Lost World and this one. I'd actually say a couple of them are a bit better. So
just to build on what you were saying about the that cool kind of ending with Grant kind of turning the raptors, there's a lot. I didn't realize how much information there is on Wiki about the original the Buckman, I want to say now, Buckman draft.
Yeah.
So it's got almost like a whole kind of breakdown of his. Do you want to quickly go through it?
Sure, mate.
So Buckman's draft involves dinosaurs causing a series of mysterious killings on the mainland, followed by an investigation. And the script also had a parallel story that involves Alan Grant, Billy, and the family crashing on the Isosaurus. So there was kind of two parallel stories.
So it feels like they've completely just stripped out the mysterious killings on the mainland.
Yes, definitely. So the draft begins with a vacationing couple. We go parasailing over Isosaurus. That's all there. Becoming the latest tourist to go missing there. So there's a series of tourists going missing over Isosaurus. And a representative for the US State Department, Harlan Flinch. Oh, that's a good name. Yeah. Goes to Costa Rica and meets environmentalist Simone Garcia, who informs him of a recent dinosaur attack. Meanwhile, Grant is seeking financial donors. Oh, he's always looking for money, Scott.
He is always.
For Raptor Research Station that he wants to build on Isosaurus. Okay, so he wants to go back.
That kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because he's obsessed with raptors, so...
Yeah, and after being... I guess that's a different skew to him. Because, again, it doesn't feel like he's moved on. Three, he's still a grumpy fuck. And so Finch offers Grant exclusive research rights to the island if he helps the US government acquire jurisdiction over it. Grant agrees and is scheduled to testify along with Simone at a hearing to be held the next day in San Jose, Costa Rica. Grant also meets Paul Roby, a wealthy businessman who offers him a donation if he will host an aerial tour of Isosauna. Grant agrees and they fly over the island prior to the hearing, along with Grant's graduate student, Billy. Oh, Billy's still there. Good. And Paul's 12-year-old son, Miles, a dinosaur enthusiast. Also on the tour is Paul's bodyguard, Cooper, of course, and Susan Brentworth, Paul's business associate and girlfriend. Oh, here we go. Just people who are going to die, Scott.
Yeah.
The plane is forced to land on the island after hitting an unidentified object. As it takes off again, it hits a Spinosaurus. And crashes. The story would then alternate between the island and San Jose. The hearing would reveal that dinosaur attacks have taken place in various mainland locations, ranging from California Peninsula to Panama. Finch becomes concerned that the dinosaurs are breeding, thus posing a worldwide problem. The island scenes would largely play out the same as the film, although the aviary and InGen laboratory sequences were much longer and more complex in this draft. Part of the script would involve the humans spending the night in the laboratory and making their base of operations, although velociraptors would eventually sneak into the lab after Billy stole their eggs.
Billy
and your eggs. All the humans would escape on dirt bikes. This feels... We love a good dirt bike sequence.
We do.
those those naughty boys.
It's those naughty
and would later take refuge in the treetops. Cooper would die to velociraptors while protecting Miles, and Billy would die to the pterodons during the Avery sequence. Similar to, I guess that's
yeah, what it's taken.
Near the end of the draft, the US government sends a fighter jet to bomb the island and destroy the dinosaur population. In the process, Robbie is spotted by the pilot and he and his family are rescued from the island. However, Grant refuses to leave and in his final scenes retreats into the jungle, incorporate in Spielberg's initial idea. Ooh. So is they, oh, I like that. So the idea that Grant now just wants to live among
with
the dinosaurs.
The dinosaurs. Yeah.
Mm.
These final scenes inspired the title Jurassic Park Extinction.
That's a good title. That, to be honest, that's a very good title.
Yeah.
I like that. although this is, yeah, I like the reason why they didn't go for it. Because it suggests a definitive end to the franchise. And we don't want that, Scott. This needs to go on.
Johnston also considered it a vague title, with Extinction potentially referring to the dinosaurs, the human population, or Dr. Grant. The name, a vague title, and then they go for Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
And I mean, other potential titles, Jurassic Park Breakout and the Extinction Jurassic Park 3.
I
guess, like you say, like I think you're absolutely right, Scott. They just basically jettisoned the San Jose stuff.
Yeah, which is kind of, it would have made it quite intriguing, didn't it? Because I think we were talking about with Lost World and what they could potentially set up with the ending of that movie where they bring dinosaurs to the mainland. It kind of makes sense because there were raptors that arrived on that boat that we don't necessarily see leave. So all of a sudden you've got these mysterious killings on the mainland and stuff. It makes sense in terms of the movie. I mean, this is almost completely divorced from anything that happened in number two, isn't it? So
no, you're right. You're right.
I like it. I think they should have rolled with that.
Well, and it just feels like Alan Grant's character has evolved and moved on since the first film. It makes sense that he's, you know, rather than rejecting the dinosaurs, he's kind of wants to embrace that and research the raptors especially. And that maybe, yeah, like I say, and that gives him a reason that he's found out there's tons of raptors on this second island. And wanting to set up a research station makes sense as well, because it always seems to be that obsession with either destroying them or owning them.
Yeah.
Because at the end of... Yeah, because you're right, because at the end of two, Hammond tries to make it like a nature reserve, isn't it? Like a preserve for the dinosaurs. And that's kind of, they don't even refer to that. It feels like a bit of a no man's land.
Yeah.
Nobody's in charge, nobody's... And you think they would have done that. They would have set up research, they would have set up some sort of keeping an eye on them. And there's none of that.
Crazy.
It's
interesting. It's an interesting movie. You always learn stuff about the movies chatting about them, though, don't we? I mean, it's I hadn't really looked into, like I say, this was just another Jurassic. It was not just another dinosaur movie. This one, wasn't it? But it's got such a. It's still such a lot of controversy around the script, the drafting, the direction, the casting. Even during the making of the movie, some of the cast say that it was quite a tough movie to film in terms of them having to use more makeup to cover up actual real bruises than fabricate fake bruises and stuff like that. So it's, you know, there's a lot there.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, Scott, I think it just shows, you know, that people always assume that, that they sometimes wonder why stuff goes wrong or why stuff isn't as good as it. Because most of the time, unfortunately, even when you've got, how much should we say it was, how much did it cost to make? 90 million?
Yeah.
Even though you got 90 million, it's still a complete shit show as far as trying to get it together, make sure it's all planned out. And it's incredible it is incredible that they spend that amount of money on something when they don't have a clear idea.
And I think they were, that's right. And I think they were something like 18 million into the movie before they decided the direction they wanted the script to take. They were in sort of storyboarding and stuff like that. They'd already sunk a great deal of money into the project before rewriting and stuff like that. It's insane.
And it does feel like you're saying, and then what they end up with is basically a rehash of the first one of, you know, people, characters trapped on the island trying to get off the island, and that's it. Which, is that interesting? Do we need another one of those? No. and even that initial draft, that you could tell they were trying to move it beyond the island and attacks on the mainland and something going on there. I want Wild Man Alan Grant, I think, just living off the land, living off the dinosaurs. He becomes the great white hunter. Maybe he just starts killing them. he doesn't like him anymore. But that makes sense for Alan Grant to be living among the dinosaurs. Goes full on.
Yeah, it really goes native. He's learned he can talk to raptors and wants to explore that connection.
He falls in love,
becomes part of the pack.
Part of the pack. Yeah. He just running with them. He's on the back of a raptor. He's naked, Scott.
But that's
naked.
Kind of a... have you seen any of the new movies? Well, I say the new movies, the sort of reboot in inverted commas with Chris.
It's only the last one I haven't seen. So,
there's a certain amount of that in the movie, isn't there?
That's
Chris Pratt's training there. So once again, it could have been Dr. Grant that he learned that stuff from and everything. You know, perhaps Dr. Grant spending time on the island with the raptors, he kind of evolves this connection with them and stuff. It's not rocket science, man. They should have thought a little bit more.
Well, because they don't even really go into that in Jurassic World, do you? Because he's using like clickers and he's almost training them like they do train animals.
He's got that magic hand. He holds out that magic hand.
and he's obviously beautiful. So
obviously glorious.
But why don't they bring the resonator in and he's blowing and he's communicating with them in that way. So it connects to this amazing film.
Potentially amazing film.
But again, just any sort of connective tissue between them, because they're all part of the same Jurassic universe.
Mm.
No, I need to watch Dominion because I think I'm interested to see where they, because I think they never go. I think Spielberg wanted to do it, and I know they kind of do it, and I don't know how far it goes in the last film of dinosaurs and man living together or trying to coexist.
Yeah,
and that's really interesting, and you could really, I think
it
I
really
know,
is, isn't it? And I understand maybe why they weren't trying to do that in the 90s or even 2000s, because the stuff they can do now on the screen compared to what, you know, the sacrifices you have to make in terms of visuals and script back then, now really is the time to explore that kind of storyline, you know, because I mean, it's just incredible what we see on the screen and TV.
And it's just a concept that takes it beyond Jurassic Park, and I think, and again, you're never going to be able to do Jurassic Park again, and I think what makes Jurassic Park so wonderful is that it's a really tiny, controlled story.
Stop trying to do it again, isn't it? You have to try something a bit different. And I feel like that's the evolution of where this should have ended up, for sure.
Yeah.
It didn't quite make it, did it?
Not in this original trilogy, I guess. And it's a long time till they reboot it. Was a good kind of 10 years or so? I think probably a bit more.
A bit more.
Because I think there was... I've had to find that. I remember there being wild plans for a literal Jurassic World, kind of set in the near future with dinosaurs and stuff. But was it like a frozen planet as well? I think they had, anyway. I remember there was some crazy ideas flying around between this one and Jurassic World. And I wouldn't say Jurassic World was a mistake. I kind of like a lot of what Jurassic World does, but let's be honest, it's just trying to do Jurassic Park, but bigger. And does it succeed? We will find out, because we will chat about it at some point, I'm sure. But I know people are probably screaming at us to do the Kelvin timeline as well. I know we're avoiding all these reboots. We haven't quite dared go into them just yet. Just yet. I'm not sure what we'll tackle first, but we'll see. We'll see. But, well, so yeah.
Yeah,
it's just gone down in my estimation. I think just Lost World and this, it's just not Jurassic Park. If you just don't even try, but you did.
Yeah,
well done for trying.
Good job.
Good job for trying.
pat on the back. Firm you shake made, of the hand.
Yeah, you made lots of money. Well done. But they will not be remembered. I know we could probably try to start chatting about these because it is the 30th anniversary of Jurassic Park this year, which makes me feel incredibly old school.
I know, man. We're not getting any younger.
but there's a reason why that will get there's a big reason why that gets many Lego sets and special 4K Blu-ray releases and all that jazz. I very much doubt Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 will have any fanfare.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so.
It will stand a test of time. It is one of the best blockbuster films, if not one of the best films made, Jurassic Park.
Do you want me to read you a list of accolades just to finish off that the movie was even nominated for or won?
Ooh, go
so
for
you got
it.
The BMI Film Awards, Best Music. It won that.
Oh, yeah. John Williams' finest.
Golden Raspberry Awards, Worst Remake or Sequel, nominated. Golden Reel Awards, Best Sounding Effects, Effects and Foley, nominated. Best Visual Effects, the Satellite Awards, Best Sound, Best Science Fiction Film, Best Special Effects, and then Stinker's Bad Movie Awards. Worst Actress, Worst Screenplay for a Film, grossing more than 100 million worldwide using a Hollywood Math. What's Hollywood Math?
I don't know.
And Worst Sequel, nominated. So, yeah, I think it speaks volumes. Special Effects and Visual Effects and Sound, Best Music, you know, and then when it comes to the quality of the acting, bless it.
What else? I'm just looking up what else came out. It's 2001.
Wasn't that Fans? No.
As well, look, it's Fellowship. Why did Fellowship of the Ring was 2001? Wow. Spielberg was making AI, artificial intelligence, the old...
gotcha.
Robot baby, robot kid. Planet of the Apes, the first reboot that was with Mark Wahlberg. Fucking hell. Tomb Raider came out that year.
Was it Harry Potter as well? Was there
Harry Potter? The start of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Wow, what a year.
Tremors 3 came out. probably the height of the Tremors series. No, that's a joke. Not an amazing year. Just looking. Scary Movie 2. Oh, Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Love that.
There's a classic for you and me. I remember we both love that.
Yeah, man. So you got Fellowship of the Ring and Potter are the big ones on those lists, I think.
Yeah, and then a lot of, let's be honest, Drek.
Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Not a great film. Donnie Darko was out that year. That's a good classic. But yeah, so...
The Mexican with Brad Pitt and Julia Roberts.
The Mummy Returns. Talking of, that's a trilogy we need to do.
Oh, the Mummy movies.
Mulholland Drive. It's a standard year. But yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Was it Hannibal? Was Hannibal? too bad.
Hannibal was it? Yeah, I did see that. Yes, there's another trilogy, Scott.
Oh, it's not my cup of tea, that trilogy.
So it's fine. If you want to watch it, knock yourself out. But if you really want to watch a dinosaur film, Jurassic Park is our pick out of those films. And rule of diminishing returns, I feel. The more you go back to the island, the less you take away. But as always, Scott, it was a pleasure to chat.
It was a tough start, but we got going. Yeah, like you say, well done. And say, if you're still listening, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. And until next time, Scott, remember, life always finds a way.
Let's hope Jurassic Park movies don't find a way.
Thank you for listening to It's a Chat with me, Paul Williams, and Scott Charnock. If you want to ask us a question, we can be reached on Twitter at It's a Chat Podcast, or you can email us at itsachatpod@gmail.com. Our theme music is by Aaron Kenny, and always remember,
it's a chat!